Good day, and welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. Midterm elections are usually a referendum on the party that controls the White House. If there's a Republican president, then Republicans often are punished by voters 2 years after that president was elected. If the president is a Democrat, as he is right now, the expectation is the same, that voters would be frustrated with the fits and starts of the first 2 years that almost anybody has in office, and would send a message through midterm elections saying so. What's more, right now, we've got a lot of economic issues that are at minimum uncertain, if not downright negative. Prices are quite high right now at the pump, at grocery stores, everywhere we spend money, and that typically motivates voters almost more than anything else to punish the party in power. But after Tuesday's elections, it's clear voters had something else on their minds. Democrats seem to come out in almost record numbers in many states and seem to have signaled, at least, that they'd like for the Democrats to keep power in their states and maybe in Washington, in Congress. The House does appear to be going in the direction of Republican control, but if that happens, it will be a pretty narrow majority, which will make whoever the Speaker of the House is have a pretty tough time getting anything done. The Senate, on the other hand, looks to still be pretty much a toss-up. We won't know what that looks like for sure, I think, at least until December 16th, when the runoff election in Georgia between Raphael Warnock and Herschel Walker is over. And when you look at governor's mansions across the country, there are a lot more Democrats who seem to either keep their jobs or get jobs in states that had been controlled by Republicans. So how did all this happen? How big of an effect did the Dobbs decision about abortion in the spring have on voting patterns? How much did the January 6th insurrection, or the fact that you still have a lot of election deniers in the Republican Party, many of them on the ballot this fall, making people uncomfortable about the idea that we need to move on, that we need to have trust and faith in the democratic process? Why did Democrats do so well on Tuesday? And why did Republicans not make more of the midterm opportunity? That is where we want to continue the conversation about Tuesday's elections. Want to continue to hear from you. What do you make of what happened at the ballot box on Tuesday? What do you make of what happened here in Michigan? What do you make of what's happening on a national level? The still uncertain outcomes of control of Congress. Did you watch the president's speech yesterday? What did you think about what he said about the results? But key to that question is, what did you think about what he said about how the next 2 years will play out, how he would like the next 2 years to play out? There were lots of questions about how he would handle inflation. There were questions about Ukraine. There were questions about any number of social issues. What did you take away from what Biden said? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can work you into the conversation. We've got a great guest with us today to talk about the national picture after Tuesday's elections. Patrick Marley is a national reporter who focuses on voting issues in the upper Midwest for the Washington Post. Patrick, welcome to Detroit Today.
Well, thank you for having me on.
So I want to start here. Why wasn't there a red wave the way that many people anticipated? And you cover the upper Midwest, which I assume includes Michigan and Wisconsin and Minnesota. These are states where we saw on a state level incredible efforts and achievement by Democrats to either hold on to power or to gain power. I know that here in Detroit, we're really focused on what happened here in Michigan. But I know a lot of folks in Minnesota are talking a lot about what happened in the elections there. So what's your take on why Republicans couldn't sell what seemed to be a pretty easy message? It's midterms. The president is not terribly popular. Why didn't that translate into a big day for them?
Well, I think you touched on much of that in your introduction, that the Dobbs decision was this sort of tectonic event that rippled through politics in a way, you know, we weren't really sure how it would play out. It has proved to be very bad for Republicans. And, you know, if you think back to a year ago, the expectations were that this would have just been an absolute rout for Republicans, that they would have been in tremendous shape after this election because, like you say, Biden's numbers are really bad. Inflation is high. Right now, to try to control inflation, you've got interest rates that are going up, but we haven't had the effects yet of that bringing down inflation. So you've got sort of a double whammy, particularly for people who are trying to buy a house or a car. And just the history is that in midterm elections, the party in power loses some seats. So it should have been a really good night. But you had, on top of the abortion issue, which played very big, Trumpism. I think that, you know, the Republican Party is still wrestling with a segment of their base that is very devoted to the former president, and a number of Republicans who want to move on. And, you know, Trump's numbers, for when you take the whole electorate into account, are not very good either. And so normally you don't have the differences in a presidential election. It's two candidates, maybe both of them with some negatives, and voters have to choose. And in a midterm, it's sort of more a referendum on the president. In this case, because Trump has remained so public, you did once again have that contrast between two figures, neither of them very popular, but it turned out to work quite a bit in Democrats' favor this time around.
Yeah. At the same time, you do have some states where Republicans actually did pretty well. Ohio, Florida, Texas, North Carolina, they all saw Republican gains. What's the difference between those areas of the country and places where Democrats seem to be able to hold the line better? I think that's actually a pretty important question as we kind of turn our attention now to 2024, the next presidential election. I think there are some things that happened in those states. There are some issues, candidates in those states who could play a real role in Republicans kind of crafting their message to take control in 2 years.
So Florida is definitely the bright spot for Republicans on election night. DeSantis, you know, is a national figure already, just breezed into re-election. Rubio also, you know, very easily won. And, you know, I think both Florida and Ohio in the popular imagination are sort of these swing states. They, you know, because they were so important if you go back to 2000 and the 2004 elections. But those states have really shifted and are pretty Republican now. That should be abundantly clear after this past Tuesday night. In Ohio, J.D. Vance won. You did see Democrats make a play for that seat with Tim Ryan trying to run as a different kind of Democrat, one not as associated with the National Party, one trying to win back the working class voters that Trump took away from Democrats in many ways. You know, although he didn't win, I don't think that that's necessarily means that strategy is bad for Democrats in certain states. You know, John Fetterman won in Pennsylvania with a similar approach of appeal to working people. And so I think you will see that kind of strategy maybe transplanted to more states, though Ohio looks like it's a place where Democrats just really can't compete in statewide races for the moment.
Yeah. I mean, Ohio and Florida, which if we go back a few cycles, these were battleground states. These were states that we kind of looked to determine national outcomes. I would say that, you know, Florida seems very much out of reach for Democrats at this point. They haven't won it in a presidential contest in quite some time. And as we saw, the internal politics in the state are very red. Ohio seems to be really headed the same way. Is that part of a larger shift of alignment, of the political alignment in the country that has seen states like North Carolina and Virginia, Arizona and Nevada emerge as battlegrounds, and these other states move more solidly into the Republican column?
Yeah, absolutely. The map has shifted, and you know the upper Midwest is a big swing place, right? Like Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan all went for Trump in 2016, and then for Biden in 2020. I think in 2024, those three states, there's going to be so much attention for people in Michigan who are tired of the political ads they just endured. Buckle up, because you're going to see a whole bunch more of them in 2 years. You know, Arizona, as you mentioned, I mean, that is clearly a key battleground. We still don't know the results of the governor's race down there or the Senate race, but you're going to see an intense focus down there in the Southwest. And then Georgia is the other place where, you know, you've got mixed results, right? Brian Kemp pretty comfortably got into a second term as governor. But the Senate race, as you mentioned, is going right into a runoff. You know, that we're going to have deja vu here very likely, because the control of the Senate may be determined by that state once again in a runoff. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to, those are the hot spots. And it just underlies this weird system we have in America where, you know, this relatively tiny population of voters have these supercharged voting powers. And you live in Michigan, you're fortunate to have that. But if you live in, you know, Tennessee or Montana or, you know, some other state, most other states, California, your vote doesn't really carry much weight in a presidential election, because we know how those electoral college votes are going to go.
Yeah, yeah. We're talking right now with Patrick Marley, a Washington Post national reporter who focuses on voting issues in the upper Midwest. We're talking about Tuesday's election results, what they mean at a national level, where we stand with control of Congress, something that I don't think we will be able to say much definitively about for at least several days, if not several weeks. We want to hear from you, though, about how you're feeling about what happened on Tuesday. How do you feel about what happened here in Michigan? How do you feel about the way things are going nationally? Are you somebody who was really apprehensive about the job that President Biden has done for the last 2 years and wanted a change? Or are you somebody who decided that maybe despite those apprehensions, you were more worried about things you saw in the Republican Party or in Republican candidates? Remember, here in Michigan, all three statewide candidates on the Republican side were election deniers, the people who at different points also supported the folks who went to Washington on January 6th of last year to disrupt the counting of votes. Was that something that motivated you to vote one way or another on Tuesday? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll try to include you in the conversation that way. Before we get to phones, I want to talk just a little about what the president said yesterday and what he will do over the next 2 years. But first, let's take just a quick listen to President Biden. I believe he was in the East Room of the White House yesterday when he addressed the press.
As I have throughout my career, I'm going to continue to work across the aisle to deliver for the American people. And it's not always easy, but we did it the first term. And I'll be surprised a lot of people that we signed over 210 bipartisan laws since I've become president. And we're revitalizing American manufacturing, gun safety. We did it together. And dozens of laws positively impacting on our veterans. And let me say this. Regardless of what the final tally in these elections show, and there's still some counting going on, I'm prepared to work with my Republican colleagues. The American people have made clear, I think, that they expect Republicans to be prepared to work with me as well.
It was President Biden in Washington yesterday talking about the election results and how he will respond. Before we get to listeners, Patrick, I wonder what you make of his prospects for getting more of his agenda enacted, particularly if the House goes Republican, or I suppose it's still possible that both houses of Congress could go red.
Yes. I mean, it does seem that the Republicans will have a small majority in the House, and it's certainly possible that they will control the Senate by one seat. So in either case, narrow margins. But even if it's just the House that flips, it's going to make Biden's job much tougher. I mean, we saw in the first 2 years of his first term how much challenge he had getting things together when he just had a 50-50 Senate. Now, he did have some accomplishments. You just heard him talk about those. But if you just remember news coverage, there was a lot of, you know, his Build Back Better plan never came together, you know, because it just takes one senator to defect from his party and he loses that. And of course, they have filibuster in the Senate. So he had a great deal of difficulty even when his party controlled all of the federal government. If the Republicans take the House, which appears likely, you know, they're going to do all kinds of investigations. You're going to hear about Hunter Biden all the time. They'll investigate any number of things. They will, you know, the Republicans are very divided over Ukraine policy right now, so there's going to be a lot of discussion over that. You have the risk of shutdowns. You have, you know, you'll have a fight over the debt limit. And all of those things, you know, gobbles up a lot of time and makes it harder for everyone in Congress to focus on other issues. You know, maybe they can find some areas of compromise. You know, there may be things on inflation that both parties want to do, but it will be a tougher job for Biden. Now, this is going to be contrasted with the fact that Kevin McCarthy or whoever the next speaker is will have an incredibly hard time governing that caucus. Mm-hmm. It's going to be this super tiny majority if the Republicans take it. I guess if the Democrats take it too, but if the Republicans take it, they're going to have trouble coming up with the votes for a speaker. And then, like, the divisions of Ukraine will just be their divisions on their positions on Ukraine will just be out in the open, and they will have a lot of trouble just mustering the votes, even though they have a majority to pass any kind of routine legislation, let alone higher profile bills.
Yeah, yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. Let's go to Anthony in Ann Arbor. Anthony, welcome to the show.
Hey, Stephen. Well, you hear, yeah, that Kevin McCarthy is going to have a slim majority and mm-hmm. the House Freedom Caucus is going to give him a hard time. I've seen all kinds of articles about it. They're mm-hmm. going to try to get what they want out of him if they can't pick somebody else more in their liking. And it's just funny to me because we had that situation with the Democratic Party the last 2 years mm-hmm. that had a slim majority. And where have you ever heard of our progressives like our own Rashida Tlaib trying to get a demand out of Pelosi? Never heard of anything like that.
Well, she did withhold her vote on the infrastructure bill and talked about withholding her vote on the Inflation Reduction Act and other things because she wanted Build Back Better. Now, I think you can make an argument that it wasn't terribly successful. It does seem that the right side of the Democratic Party, people like Joe Manchin, have a little more sway over the party than that. But it is interesting to point out that we've been living with this kind of limited authority, even though you know, both houses of Congress and the White House are under the same party. Patrick, it's an interesting comparison. It may be. I guess I'm not sure if it will be more frustrating that it will be a Republican controlled House than a Democratic controlled Senate that's narrow for the Biden agenda. I mean, as you point out, he hadn't been able to get Democrats to do everything he wanted to do.
Yeah, I think that, and to the caller's point, I mean, there are tensions in the Democratic leadership. Certainly that party has its own, you know, battles between the progressive wing and the more moderate part of the party. They do seem to be able to keep that in check, and you know, toward the latter half of this most recent congressional cycle, you saw Democrats United with Pelosi leading them, and you know, less of the sort of conflict between the progressive caucus and her. And so I don't think that was been highlighted of late. Whereas in the Republicans, they have this long-standing fight between their most conservative wing and the more moderate parts of their party. You know, I mean, just think back to John Boehner and Paul Ryan. They had, nonstop headaches when they were the speaker, and that is like going to be nothing compared to what the next speaker for the Republicans has to deal with, because those problems are only exacerbated when you have a narrow majority. You know, when you if you have a big majority and there's something like the Freedom Caucus, you can, you know, ignore them or give less to them.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, the Freedom Caucus will have this, like, be able to tip the scales over whether they have the votes to pass something or not. So McCarthy or whoever the speaker is would have to cater to them a lot more. At the same time, that is going to make Republicans in swing districts panic, because they'll be worried that they're going too far to the right.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Patrick Marley of the Washington Post, it was really great to have you here to kind of unmask some of the things that are going on at the national level. Thanks so much for joining us on Detroit Today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to shift back to local politics, talk about Michigan. We're going to talk a little more about the proposals that passed, all three proposals that passed on Tuesday. Also talk about Democrats and the way they rolled up big wins, both locally and at the state level. We're going to be joined by Craig Mauger of the Detroit News and Clara Hendrickson of the Detroit Free Press. We also want to continue to hear from you. 313-577-1019 is the number on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag us, and we'll include you that way. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.